Thank you. And everybody's hearing. Well, possible the ones that are behind recording are also seeing. Okay, so I'm from Kwai Lee. Probably most of you already know. It's the Finnish broadcasting company in Finnish, so it's like BBC equivalent in Finland. And I'm actually working on my title. Changes a little bit all the time, but I'm actually working on architecture of data science, also doing hands-on data science. But I'm telling you about the data science side, on also about the analytics side in general, but also having some examples of artificial intelligence more generally that are not precisely data science. Well, this is all depends on the definition. I have been doing my research on TUT in Tampere, and actually after a couple of phases I got to Kwai Lee, so some research background also on machine learning. So what I was going to tell you about was first, because I understand this is more general general course on what's going on the era. I was going to talk a little bit about what analytics, my experiences, what analytics actually is. Then I'm going to go more deeply into what Kwai Lee has, what kind of stuff we have, and then some AI cases, precisely speech to text, with our audio video clips, and then we have some prediction of demographics of the users, so age and gender, and then our like hardcore data science is our custom-made Arena recommendation engine. Actually, we also have it's all still to some extent used elsewhere also, but I'm concentrating on Arena. Arena is our video player. In web. So, just a couple of general slides on what I think about data science or data analytics. I'm actually using here the somehow similar term data mining. What is quite typical view, business view on what data mining or data science is that there's some, you have problem, you put the data somewhere, so here we have data, we put data somewhere in a magic box and then we get results. And yeah, well, you could put enough people in there and that's it. But of course, yeah, that's actually true, but it's huge work. In the magic box, there's a huge work and actually different kind of work, different kinds of work. And easily, especially if you are having some kind of system inside, like that's in production actually, it gets worse and worse. You have to maintain the stuff, you actually have to do a lot of work. So I have a couple of steps on what usually should be the I think that should be the like way of deciding what to do and do analytics in general, especially on when I'm talking about analytics in general, my experience is actually on like not on business analytics, like traditional business analytics, but more like newer, also ad hoc analytics, but like working on recommendation engines. So it's not only reporting, but also predictions and clustering and machine learning and this kind of stuff. One of the key things is that you need some business need. Often you have like idea that, okay, we would like to do this and this, but it doesn't mean that you actually have a business need. Who is the customer and what is he or she doing on it? So we have some kind of problem. Hopefully we have quite a couple of problems. The next question is that what information we need for actually translated from Finnish to English yesterday, so it's not very clear. But the idea in the second bullet is that you have some question and what information you need to solve the problem. And the second question after that, okay, you have a perfect solution, perfect information to do the solution. What do you do after that? If the answer is, well, it's good to know, usually it's the wrong answer, so go back to the actual big business need. It's very common that you are doing analytics or data science, and in the end you realize that, okay, this is very interesting, but we don't actually, it's not like actionable. Nothing actionable happens after this. And it's usually not worth the money or work to do that kind of stuff. Usually there should be some reason. Well, you can do some pilots or something, but usually you should have some kind of need and actually get some actionable information out of that that actually affects your decision making or gives you something like that. It's actually very difficult to make sure that this happens, but at least you should try out that one. The next phase is that we have to get and you go through your data and see what information you actually, what solutions or what analysis you can actually do based on your data. So there are like two phases. What do you do when you get your results? What actions you take? And can you actually get the information based on your data? Usually you realize that, no, we don't actually have enough data to do that kind of information. Do that kind of analysis. And then, well, you have to change your problem and see what are the actions on that one. So you just have to like iterate, okay, we have this kind of data, we can solve these problems but not these. And see, like, find some relevant information that you actually, relevant problem that actually you can answer. That's actually, well, I'll go more into that later. Next phase is that you are actually doing the data engineering part, getting the data, getting it together and processing it. And then you do the magic box. You do the data modeling where you need some kind of understanding of machine learning or statistics or something like that. That's like usually usually you think about the magic box only, but that's it's just one phase in the process. Presenting results and seeing Stan doing the actions, and also maybe wondering if you actually got the results you wanted. Did something went well, what went wrong, and then start from the beginning again, the next iteration. What is important to realize is that actually the beginning is the most difficult part. Usually if something was wrong, if things go wrong, usually the problem was in the beginning. So business needs you had weren't actually very important. You didn't actually have data to do that, or you weren't able to get actions based on the results. And actually, the most time and the most work is the data engineering part. It's actually, often it's thought like it's very boring stuff. You just get data, you realize there's something wrong in the data, you have to like replace it. Well, you don't have this data, you have to get it elsewhere and this kind of stuff. And that's usually, that takes most time. Often we have data scientists in our teams, but actually most of their work is also based on data engineering. Then they have some predictive models or visualizations, but actually most of the work they are doing is based on data engineering. That's just getting data right before putting them to some kind of model. Okay, and this was actually what I wanted to discuss about the processes. Then I have one slide on different kind of analytics. Often, this is actually one quite typical categorization that has been going on for a few years, but it's still very relevant, I think. There are a couple of authors, but what is important here is that on the left-hand side, we have like typical reporting, and on the right-hand side, we have something that's more like you are going further. On the left-hand side, you have analysis that gives people information to do the actions. On the right-hand side, the model is doing everything, or AI is doing everything, or nearly everything. So there is no human interaction between the actual results. And An example on the right-hand side will be, well, something simple like robots or something like that doing manufacturing. Or actual recommendation is something that's happening. There's no human intervention anywhere before the user sees the recommendation engine. Of course, this could be taken a lot further, some kind of decision making or something. And what is important on the right-hand side is that it's usually where you see best results or get the most use. If there is just information for the human, then you still have the decision-making process and you have a lot of stuff to go through. You have been helped, hopefully, but you are making better decisions, hopefully, but you still have to do all the work. On the right-hand side, you are like, people can do something more constructive than just automated work. So on the left-hand side, we have like questions that, like what happened or what's happening actually right now. And as I said, reporting to humans who make conclusions and actions. And we are having some graphs or visualizations or KPIs. It's key something. I don't remember. The next phase is predictive modeling, which like you are predicting future. What's like information that you don't actually have. You are generalizing or predicting future, what's going to happen in the near future. And it's still giving you information on like for a human, but it's a little bit doing conclusions or like predictions on what's going to happen. So it's not leaving everything to human. But humans still makes the decisions, and we are using machine learning or statistical modeling or something like that. That's a little bit like stupid categorization. You still use machine learning in descriptive analysis, so I think the methods are not so relevant on the bottom. And prescriptive analysis, actually, there's misspelling in there. So what are the questions? How do we get to the target? What happens if we do this and this kind of stuff? So there should be some automatic actions or actions suggestions or something like that. And we are having tools, maybe simulations. We have more simulations on that kind of stuff. Okay, but what I would like to remember from this slide is that we are having different kinds of data science or AI. How much the computer does of what part the computer does on the work and what the human does. And usually people feel that when computer does more work, they feel like it's doing, like it's more useful in that way. Comments or questions on this general analytics before I go to the quietly side? Yeah, sure. That's a good question. So that's exactly, I think, the only way to get it like done is that you have to do some kind of iterations here. Especially in the beginning, you have to, often you have questions, but you realize you don't have the data. Or the data is, there are a lot of mistakes or something is missing in the data. So you have to do the iterations. On the other hand, if you do, like, it's like in software engineering processes, if you do the try to define too well what you are going to do, you'll never get to actually work. So, well, there's this. You should get your hands on something. Maybe one way is that you get your hands on something and see if this is relevant. I think that's like actually the original definition of data mining was that you get your hands dirty and see what happens. But there's some kind of trade-off between these, yeah. So it's not, what I don't mean on this one, that you have to define everything. That's right. Yeah. That's a good point, actually. I just realized that this is not like waterfall modeling. I don't mean that in that way. Okay, then about Qualy Analytics, what kind of stuff we have, what are we doing? I'm actually going through in general and then more deeply in different cases, what's behind them. The first one, like one of the most generally used is that we are having, actually let's go through the next one first. So we are having these dashboards, this is from last year, so they are not the newest ones. What we are having is that, what is written in here, in Finnish, is that on a weekly basis, how many people we reach it. It's like on the last week we had 25% of people, audience we reached on our articles. I'm not actually sure if Arana is here also. And how many people, different people read our articles, and what was the difference on the previous year. These are actually old KPIs. We are different now. It's more like, actually this is, we are currently concentrating not on how many people we met, but how many minutes people read our articles or how many minutes they watched our videos. We didn't have that possibility last year, so that's the reason we didn't do that. But it's a lot, we are not searching for clicks, but more like interesting content people are searching, reading. And then we have the same stuff on the 4 to 5 year old people. What is interesting in here is that everybody can see this. So in the whole company, everybody can see these figures based on different categories, based on different articles or something. So the actual information is given to everybody. It's not like only for like leaders or something like that. And that I also think it's the visualization or analysis has more effect if everybody is seeing them. What is here shown is actually related to the previous one. We are having like top articles based on different numbers. This is like how many hours your article was read. So here we have that one. How many page view, how many minutes this article was read. So it's like if it's a longer one, of course, people are hopefully reading like longer it. And actually 2 minutes is quite long time. And how much it was searched in Facebook and how many times it was actually page load was done. And actually this is like the click, how many times it was opened. And it's actually not as interesting as these two first one. And this is also something that's given like everybody is seeing this. And how reporters are actually using this is that when they give make an article, it could be like, well, one example is that if nobody is reading the article, is there something wrong? Did I not publish it, or should I put the Facebook like line on that one, post on that one, or something like this? And also, if you a journalist has different articles, he or she can see which ones are read more and this kind of stuff. So these are actually, people are actually interested in these questions. And also, one question in here is that the information should be available quite fast because we can't assume that journalists would be in there interested in the article that was written last week. He or she wants the information quite often or quite early after writing the article. Yeah, we went through. And, well, here's actually the same thing as previously, but we have, as I mentioned, we are having prediction on gender and age of the readers or users. Why this is relevant is that Qualy is a public broadcaster, and the idea is that we think that our task is defined by law. And what is said here is that we should offer something to everybody. But it seems there are a couple of contact groups, for example, under 30 years old or under 20 years old, who are difficult to reach, and that's one of the reasons we want to like predict the users and see what kind of content actually is used by these target groups. Actually, gender is not that, doesn't seem to be that important, but it's, well, we didn't know it in advance. Okay, this was the first example of analytics we are done. The next one is recommendation engine in Arena player. We are actually having two different cases where this recommendation engine is used. On the front page of Arena, yeah, sure, it's shown, but also this is an example of you can, there are a couple of channels, we are calling them channels, like comedy, drama, and series that you can select from, like genres, you could say. Actually, gender means different thing, but anyway. And when you go to that sub front page, you are seeing here, you are actually a couple of different choices, newest one, most popular, things that are actually going to disappear from Arena. And here we have the recommendations. And here, this is one of the pages you can see the recommendations. This is based on when you go to the page. This is based on what you watched previously, and these people watched something similar as you. So you, and they watched also these video clips. So you probably will are interested in those. So similar people who watched similar things were interested in these. This is like the based on recommendation. There's actually editorial decisions, so there are people who are have some part on this one. They are selecting a pool of interesting or important stuff that are, the first ones are selected from that pool. The reason is there's a lot of discussion about this recommendation bubble. So this is one of the ways we try to fight that, so you don't see only the content that's like based on your worldview or your bubble, information bubble. Of course, in series, that's not necessarily so important, but on news and this kind of stuff, yes. Well, it could be an important year also. Second place where we are showing recommendation is after, if you are watching some or opening some video page, watch videos, and actually that's something that's more related that this and this content, these contents are similar based on who watched them. So it's not about similar people, it's more about what kind of content are similar based on watchings. This is interesting. I don't think I actually have a PDF exactly because of that one. But I should have web on that one. Just check. It seems like I should have the slides here available, but it seems like it's on Google Slides, so it seems like it disappears now and again. Yeah. Okay, and this is one author example of a recommendation engine. How many of you have installed Uutisvahti, it's like news watch, hands up. Nobody, there has to be one. Well, I have at least. So news watch is application that you can, it gives you the newest article. It's actually very handy. And there, well, you can see the biggest news, newest ones, then something that's related to your area, and also you can select some topics you are very much interested in. Actually, the topics are also here because I'm going by train from Tampere to Helsinki a lot. I have that one. And also I have Donald Trump and North Korea. They are something that... There's always some interesting news every day coming from that one, so... I have... I seem to be the only one doing that one. And then we have the... articles that should be most relevant to me. And the first one is we had this first CEO in Quietly, Merja-Yle Anttila, and there's a news on that one. So it's understandable that I'm interested in Quietly stuff. I have read stuff that's related to Quietly. And then this Trump stuff, of course. And that's based on not only what I have watched, but also what articles are similar, and I just myself select like weights on that one. On articles, what articles are interesting? It's like things that have like foreign policy or Donald Trump or Russia, Finland or financial stuff, etc. Comments and questions on this one. So how many people have ever used Arena? Great, I just wanted to do the something. How many people are using every week Arena? That's wonderful, at least some of you. How many people are using Arena on smart TV? One, okay. So it's actually, that's a little bit surprising. I assume that nobody's having TV anymore. So it's like mobile devices. That's actually what's happening, that people are, especially young people, are moving more on mobile devices, etc. Okay, I'm going to go through some of these cases more in detail, what we actually did. But first, I'm to show you something. Well, this is an interesting case that many people think that this is something that's actually like actual AI, artificial intelligence, something like this. So we had this case of getting, we have of course a lot of audio clips. It's poor audio or just on video. It's like discussion program. And we want to, like the main point in there is the discussion. And those are very relevant. In drama, it's the speech is not that significant, but still. So what we did is that the problem for us, as I mentioned, our recommendation is based on how users use the content. The problem with that one we don't actually know much about our video clips. It depends on how much people wrote. Like, for example, there's this some kind of discussion program. It probably had like two sentences that describe what's going on in there. On news, you don't even have that one. And getting that metadata on the data on something, metadata, is actually quite expensive. There has to be some human doing stuff, writing stuff on that one. And this could be used for search results. If somebody is searching for Paavo Väyrynen, we could show all the video clips or discussion programs that are related to him. And also linking between content that this, if you're interested in this discussion problem, you probably are interested in this one. And also recommendation could use. It's not the only the usage of like similarity of use cases. Actually, one important point that I didn't mention is that one of our problems in Quietly is that we are actually having huge amount of content. For example, compared to Netflix, we are having like documents and small stuff that small amount of people are watching. And it's actually we would like to offer that kind of stuff to people who are interested in those. And it's actually difficult to find them because nobody has watched them, and you should like know what's going on, that this kind of program is coming. So that's one of the reasons we have recommendation, and this metadata would help a lot. If you are watching historical documents, there could be other documents that are related to this historical stuff or something, and they could be recommended shown to you, so you don't have to search for it yourself. So, as mentioned, metadata is expensive. We would like to, it would be wonderful to create the metadata automatically. And we had a pilot with Google Speech API in 2060. I'm not sure why I mentioned that, but it's still now in production, actually. So how things go is that we are having Yle Areena content. We get the stuff, do some tricks, actually, for example, transcoding. It's in a different format. We would not want to change the resolution or something. And then we put that to Google Speech API and get the metadata and better user experience. Well, I just mentioned that there are no matching boxes, but actually this is the case. We are not actually doing much. We just put stuff in Google Speech API and get like metadata out of that one. We still have to do something with the data. But actually in this case, things are easy. What happened after that one was that we wanted to use that for content context recommendation. So as mentioned, that we could use context for the recommendation. It's called contextual filtering instead of collaborative filtering, which just means that similar people have said something. So what do we do is that we are getting, like on the previous slide, we are getting audio extract, use the Google Speech API, do lemmatization, which means we are getting rid of the endings of the words so that they are like in the normal format. And then we are doing topic model, which is like the idea in there is that we are finding similar finding words that are in similar context. So it's based on what words are around this word. And then we do the context-based recommendation. On the first phase, I'm going to comment on this one. I'll go to the next recommendation on Areena case. It was taken into production at the end of last year. Before this, we actually didn't have any way to, a good way to recommend audio. I'll go into reasons later on. Previous Areena recommendation worked well on video content. So what happened? How did the project go? We got audio collect API and got the results and just made an API that gives the results when some program is asking. So I'm talking about this one. We get the audio, call this API, do lemmatization, which is actually quite easy, just call a library. And then we just create an API that offers stuff. And then when we are doing this, we just call the API so we can separate stuff from each other. What is important in here that AI in this case was just an API call. All the magic was happening somewhere else. It was quite simple to get the stuff out. We did some post-processing, lemmatization, some pre-processing, which was actually getting the audio and maybe some transcoding. This is the case when we have some external ready services and the actually work was done, like optimization and machine learning AI stuff was done like in a black box that just worked. And what we needed on AI point of view, not very much. We just had to know that there's this kind of API and we had this kind of needs. Okay, this was like AI was very easy. We just offer stuff. The next case is that we are going a little bit deeper in custom-made code. And this example is based on the dashboards. As mentioned, we are having here the prediction of age of the people. And because of that, we need prediction on the users. This is based on Quiley ID, Yle Tunnus. How many people have created the Quiley ID? Wonderful, one. So all of you have time to create that during the lecture. The idea in Quiley Tunnus is that, or Quiley ID is that if you create the ID login, you get some benefits. For example, when you watch on smart TV, you can on bus continue with watching the video in bus, and also you can save like favorites. You can, for example, on Uutisvahti, if you destroy your mobile phone, it's stored on the web. Everything is stored on the web, on our servers, and then when you install it again, everything is restored, and you get better recommendation, etc. What we get is that we get a better understanding of what kind of people are using it. Do you find any other reasons to use Quiley Tunnus? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah, that's actually the, in addition to Uutisvahti, that's actually the reason. Because it remembers the episode, but also where I'm on the vision, what. And also, you get stuff like you can vote in UMK, what is the Eurovision Finnish version, 3-for-1 vote or something like that. Okay, but here, well, actually, there's also something you can ask what we know about you. Actually, you already can, but there's this new European data regulation coming in a couple of months, and you can ask what do we know about you, what videos you have watched when, etc. And when you create that, you can give information like, what's your language? Well, this is the reason for this is that UI is shown on that language. Also, your gender and date of birth or year of birth. It's not like obligatory. You don't have to give those. But of course, we would like you to have give those. Actually, one more thing to do that quite many people are actually ordering. Or subscribing to newsletters, for example, on drama or series, so that you are giving information that this and this kind of new good series or drama is going to be on air soon. And this is actually one of the reasons why language is here. But anyway, back to the actual point is that we have some people who have given gender and age. But for most of people, we don't know that. Either they haven't logged in, or they haven't given the age and gender. But we still want to report that with very good very good precision as well as possible, over the whole audience. And what we did is that we had to do some kind of predictive model on that one. I actually had a slide on what it actually means, that we are having just a single line of code which gives the prediction, predict age, and the second line that tells learn the prediction model based on these people that have given the age, and then the second line, predict the age. And that's actually the code that we have on modeling. We have a library which has like created, which is actually doing the optimization. So like our modeling part in strict sense is on those libraries. We have two lines of code on that one. So what actually is happening is that we get the data, then we engineer the data. We have like information like this. Cookie has watched this video on this date. We have this kind of data. What we are doing is that we are creating binary matrix. So these people has watched this and this and these videos for the past 60 days, I think. And then we do some kind of stuff on that one. It's processing, like pre-processing that part. And then we have this couple of function calls. And then we measure what is the error on that one, so we can see if everything is going well right away. So actually, the learning and prediction is quite simple, but we have to do quite much actually pre and post processing. Because, well, we have to know what this algorithm does, how it works. We actually tried out multiple algorithms and saw how well it went with them. And we actually had to select hyperparameters. So most of the algorithms you had to give some hyperparameters. So how, in what way it goes, and we have to work on those. So all in all, the actual optimization was done in this library, but actually we needed quite much information on how it works. Then we say the predictions and model. In addition to those, we also did explorative analysis. The reason for that for example, that we had to figure out when does it work, on which kind of videos it worked. For example, on sports, the gender like distribution is a lot different than on some uusi päivä, which is for youngsters. So we had to figure out how things work on different stuff. As a project, how did it? Well, we had the thesis work on doing the first version, minimum viable product, for 6 months. Then we had when we took it into production, it actually took a lot more than 6 months. We had, I could say that we have had, well, a lot more. We have three people working for 2 months or something like that, at least. We took it into production, so it's working every night, debugging what was going wrong, and actually making sure that everything works. So what is important here is to note that when you have the model and it works on that one, it actually huge a lot more work to make that work in a production environment. The things we learned on that one is that one of the reasons it took so long was that the data scientist wasn't working with the team all the time. So the team didn't actually know, the developer team didn't actually know what was going on. When they got the code, they were like a month, the data scientist was sitting next to the team, and the information changed. And it should be, the case should be that the team is already all the time knowing what's going on and also can like cooperate so that things are doing in such a way that it's easier to take into production. And actually the best way to do is that if the team actually works on the stuff by himself, there could be a data scientist, but developers can do most of the stuff, especially if there's a data scientist who is helping them all the time, sparring them. Okay, and this was actually an example of something that's AI in strict sense. It's just a couple of functions calls, these library calls. But you had to do a lot of data engineering, post and pre-processing, choosing some models and the parameters. So you try out, use different measurements or metrics for errors and see which one is best. And this is the case when you use ready libraries. How much you needed AI understanding? Well, statistic and method understanding, and also knowing the libraries. Coders can do it if they are sparring as data scientist, and I think that would be the best way to go. I'm now telling you about something that's actually taken into production. If you have just some kind of random analysis, then data scientist can do it himself or herself. Then our like case where we have been working on our most custom-made code. We actually have a team based on different recommendation engines. And as I mentioned, there are two cases where these recommendations are shown. In the beginning, it was quite similar as predictive modeling. Actually, the worst version of recommendation was also using some ready libraries. You just give the data and that's it. But after that, we realized that if you want to give more and more like features to that one, you have to do it, like use more custom-made code. So what we are actually doing right now is that, I hope I have examples on that one, yeah. What we are doing is that we are seeing what's happening how well it works with the customers. What's actually the reason for that one? Then trying different ideas. Does this help? Testing those, analyzing results, A/B tests, and actually trying to get those into production and having like iterative with this one. I'll go a little bit deeper after I have an example. Well, from the previous slide, I'll just show this is like what's happening behind the scenes. We have 5 million users. We are having 60,000 or actually 100,000 different video clips or audio clips. And we have a matrix like this. And then we are having we are approximating that with some methods, collaborative filtering methods. And here we have the users and we have the items. Are we just like, we are finding components, 60 components that like 60 common components that give clusters for the users and content. And those, when you are computing for a single user, you just compute the ranking for different proxies for the user. So magic is happening in searching for those clusters. But okay, let's go into deeper to explore recommendation. This is an example of a couple of months ago of different components that I showed you, 60 components. In the first one, we are having, well, black and white stuff, but it looks like they are historical stuff. In the second stuff, we have a children's program. And third one is drama, maybe for a little bit for youngsters here. But anyway, first thing we realize here is that we are having rintamakkeläiset, which is like for not for young people, middle-aged or older people. And then we have Lilyhammer, which is actually it's good series and well, not for the youngsters exactly, but anyway. And then we have Uusi Päivä, which is for 15 years old people or a little bit younger. So how can it be that same people are using both, watching both, like stuff for older people. Many people are watching both Uusi Päivä and something else. Well, the reason is, of course, well, tell me, what could be the reason for this one?
Different people are using the same
computer or, yeah, exactly. Different people are using the same. It's a family. It's not a single person. It's a family. In a family, you have middle-aged people and youngster. how do we take that into account? Should we recommend everything to everybody? Should we separate so somehow see that this person is watching Uusipäivä and really only showing that one, the stuff for youngsters? Or what should we do? Next one is that we have to hear weights. So weight means that this is the most important component or most important program for this component. And in here, we notice that there is the 68%. It's actually not showing very well. 68% of this component is about rintamakeläiset. So it seems like for the next one, we have 40%, 40%, 1.4, etc. So it's a lot. The weight is a lot more than for the next one. So are actually the next programs, are they even relevant? If it looks like that everybody who watches rintamakeläiset is in this component, nothing else matters. So how should we treat with this one? If somebody comes in, should we only show rintamakeläiset and not like be interested in the rest one? Or should we remove rintamakeläiset here and show only the rest one because everybody is still watching the rintamakeläiset anyway? And we don't know. We just have to try out what's the best way to go. The next one is that we are having here some animations, like drawn faces. And then we have something that is like filmed. And this is a little bit weird because we have realized that actually children are divided in, based on age, are divided in two phases. One is that you are watching animations. One is that the older children are usually older children are watching something that has like real, looks real, and it's actually video camera stuff. And again, here we notice that there are probably multiple children or different ages in here. The younger are actually these are for school kids or something. They are not for the younger ones. And actually, it seems like in the either in the same family we have a little bit older children or youngsters, or this component is about older, for kids who are changing from animations to like watching some recorded stuff. So it's like if you are in some phase, you have to do, and that's a little bit tricky because if you are starting to watch some animations, then you are showing your recommended stuff that actually only 5 years older children are watching. Do we want to do that, especially if I have some K limits? So it's not, you shouldn't be watching that one. Actually, we are currently not showing children's programs in recommendation at all. But, well, that's one question. Actually, we are planning to do the children's recommendation. But so this is something we had to notice. So what I'm telling here is that when we want to go deeper in what's happening in recommendation, we are getting 1,000 ideas. What's actually important, or what do we do? Here an example of component. Can you realize what's weird on this one? Based on related to other ones. What's common in for these? Well, you have people's faces in here, but also there are all audio clips. There are no video clips in here. So actually, there is a single component that's full of audio clips. What do you think? What's the reason? Well, the reason is that video clips are watched a lot more than audios are listened. especially because radio is listened often online. Actually, I just a guess, I would assume, because I'm doing that in car. So actually, well, anyway, so because audio is listened to so little, it's everything fits in a single component. And so if you are listening to audio, you recommended audio in general. The problem here is that we would like to recommend audio for similar audio to the people who are interested in politics. We would like to introduce you that we have video audio clip that's similar, and also other way around. But this is actually like impossible on this case because we don't have any relationship with those. And that's one of the reasons why we are doing this speech-to-text recommendation, or speech-to-text AI having, so we could do that one. So I have the same slide again. What we are doing, exploration anomalies, a couple of examples I showed you. Which ones are actually important, so that we should go deeper in there. What is really going on? What's really the reason? It could take some time. What's the reason for audio being there? Well, because it's used less. Then validating ideas. Let's try out. This should make it better. How big it takes this and this much time to do that. How much time it takes to do audio recommendation or article recommendation. How much we help win in that one. And then we do A/B testing, have two different versions and see if that actually works. The problem here is that, for example, compared to Netflix. Netflix is, the watching, typical watching doesn't in Netflix doesn't change if Olympics are starting. When Olympics or elections are coming from TV, everything goes crazy. It's not related to how people are watching on other times. And that gives a lot of variation on our watching, which means that A/B test setting, getting significant results, is very difficult. So it takes quite much time to get the actual statistically significant results. And then we should get something in the production, because otherwise it's actually not so use. The problem in here is that we could use infinite amount of time here and here, but actually this is what we actually should do. How much, if you just do this one, we are not sure if it's actually helping, but the two previous ones are just good to know stuff if it's not actually taken into production. And that's like trade-off we have to do. And I think this is quite typical in data science, is that you can get the understanding of what's going on, but if you want to get some real actions, you should validate the questions, but also gets valid the results, but also get some actionable stuff. And trade-off between these is actually quite a typical problem. This is related to your question, so making the right decisions, finding the good business needs is important. And here is an example of RN recommendation as a project. What did the team actually do? We had a small amount of two or sometimes three hardcore data scientists, but actually one or one and a half. Actually, well, I would say that in the core case it was one or one and a half data scientists. Now we have a little bit more. Not a lot of visualizations exploring the data, but actually data engineering, also as mentioned, data scientists also work mostly on data engineering stuff. And Ops and AWS is the Amazon Web Services, it's cloud we are working with. Ops means that how to get stuff automatically in the production, etc. So it's like the last line is more like typical software engineering stuff. And most of the time, of course, went to typical software engineering stuff and data engineering, especially data engineering. So this is the example of AI is a custom-made data science. and a lot of data engineering, and even more explorative analysis, as mentioned. And that needs, to some extent, data science, but it's still descriptive analysis. And if you are not lucky, then this is the case, and you have to do custom-made code. But if you are lucky, you have something ready for you, because that's a lot of easier, always cheaper. When there are no ready solutions, and when it's really worth it, because it's expensive, needs a lot of resources. And this is the case where you really need some AI understanding or machine learning understanding. Actually, I don't have very many slides anymore, so I have a couple more examples of what kind of AI projects we have. Digitizing archive material writing. So what's happening in here is that we are having a lot of archived video material or something. They are on like analogic. Stuff, they are somewhere stored, and then there could be some handwritten description, sometimes very three words, these and these people were creating this one. And that's metadata. If we get that stuff on our video players, we should get some understanding what's actually going on there. We can watch it, but if you have a huge amount of archives, we would like to search for the important materials. We have presidential elections coming, and we would like to see something about those people from archives. Article keywording. We are currently having a commercial product. We give an article to them, and they give API, and we get keywords out of those. What we do with those is article recommendation. But also, in the end of each article, you can select some keyword. Donald Trump. There's always this Donald Trump example for me. And you are, when you select that one, you see all the articles related to this keyword. And the third one is that when a journalist is searching for information or related articles, he can search, or she can search with the keywords. News bots. We are having a couple of, actually one bot, Onnibot, which is creating sports articles. We have tried that out, but actually I think the most interesting case was on these local elections, where every city or town had their own articles on what happened, and it wouldn't have been possible. So it's like simple reporting on who was elected, etc. And also what was the percentage of people, how many people voted, etc. And this wouldn't have been possible without some automation. User family quality tunnus. So here what's mentioned is that how do we realize if that's a family, a single user, and get understanding on that. Then we are having a lot of exploration, those dashboards. We are also having Tableau, which is a visualization tool for interactive visualization. But it's not AI in strict sense. It's more like analytics in general. Then some conclusions. The first one, business needs define what to do in the analytics. You have to have some business needs before you start, or understanding of business needs well. But if you use forever to doing that, then it's not a good idea. So you should have maybe some exploring the data, then discuss business needs and iteratively. Go lean, work. It would be best if the data scientist sits next to the business team and they go together iteratively on what's going on. But if you're going to get stuff in the production, prioritization can be very difficult. often it's like AI is something cool and everybody wants to have something related to them, automate stuff that's related to them. But it's actually sometimes difficult to see the big picture on what's actually important, what are the main benefits, where do we get the main benefits. And then the third bullet point is that it would be nice to have the results reachable by everybody, so dashboards or something. That's very useful, actually makes the biggest impact. The second bullet point is AI projects vary from API call to custom code, as mentioned. So there are different projects, different ways to do it. And a question is that what's typical in the future? What do you think? In which way the world is going? Some ideas. How many people are thinking that we are going towards the custom-made code? And how many people are going towards that we are giving ready-to-make libraries or services and we just use them? Quite many people didn't. What's the third alternative? Everybody's agreeing. Okay, I mean, it's difficult to say. It's very difficult to say. I would say that I think it's more typical use cases are going towards. AI is something that usually it's when it's actually in use, it's too close to realize that it's actually important. No, not very many people think that Google search engine is actually very elegant AI solution, machine learning solution. But it's so close that it's like difficult to see what's happening. And in that case, it's actually some service that you are using and everything is black box. However, in the first phase, somebody has to do the custom-made code in the first stage. So, and I think we are getting more and more services that had to be made. So I think for a consumer, it's more and more like you are seeing ready services. Third one, data engineering skills are underrated. What I've been stressing here, that we have been talking about data scientists, but actually you need data scientists, but actually the work, bigger work, is data engineering. So it's like coding, you don't need to know a lot machine learning that you can do tricks on data. So that's actually, if companies are hiring data scientists, usually they should have 4 data engineers per data scientist. You are having a lot of manual exploration and studying versus production trade of what this was mentioned in the recommendation. And what should everybody know? Everybody should know statistics in general and understand data. This means that when you have data, how to do stuff, rows and columns, how to maybe some understand normalization. What does it mean that you have missing data? I mean, understanding that actually, if you have a matrix, everything is not solved when you have a matrix. And the second one is that what does it mean that something is statistically significant? And what does correlation mean? And this kind of stuff. And in general, AI, what can you do with it that you cannot? Some understanding of what's going on, what libraries or services you have, so you can realize that, well, could we use AI on this problem? And actually, that's the last slide I have. Thank you. Questions or comments? It's very true.
Yeah, I have a couple of them.
Yes, sure.
Is AI still a little bit in the experimental in experimentation mode in Yle, or is it how significant it is for the Yle operations or the business in general? Now and maybe in
future. Yeah, that's a good question. As mentioned, for example, I'm recommending. So the question is that how important Qwily is in AI is in Qwily currently. I think, for example, speech-to-text project is already in use, and I think that's not exploration. It's like something that's in production. The predictive models for age and gender are actually in dashboards, and everybody's seeing them. Actually, journalists are using them. So in that sense, there's already something in production, but it's true that we don't have very many. Well, when we have general AI, which is actually CEO of the company, then we can say that it's quite high. But yeah, I think we are learning. We are starting projects. For example, we are not now thinking about automating scheduling process when cameramen or something are when they are working, and so we are finding new and new areas where we can use AI. So I tried not to answer the question, but.
Yeah,
that's true. We are actually having quite many projects on AI, like pilots. But the big problems on our Bifal is that when you have pilots, and this is interesting, results are good, but then where do we find money to actually get into production? Because we have so many of those, and trying out is easier. And well, it costs a lot to get AI into production. That's a problem. Okay. Do you have another question? Yeah, one big thing in the future would be automate the stuff that's boring. Well, it's not necessarily boring, but that can be automated. For example, sports articles and making articles that are quite simple. You have statistics and you do stuff. That's one point. The second point is that we are actually currently piloting like AI that gives you hints on how to write articles. You write article, it gives you hints on you should have longer. You should probably have this kind of headline. This is too long a sentence or something like that. Maybe deeper, contextual. Like you should, people who are interested in this and this could be interested in this, tell about this stuff. But well, that's pilot, we don't see. And we are trying out and seeing if journalists are actually using that, if it's interesting for journalists. Or do they think that AI is doing their work, they don't like it. That's one big thing. So things that are repetitive and should be done. And also, well, metadata is a big problem, automating that kind of stuff. And also, maybe like the customer. So what do we show the customer? In which case, it's also something that it could be personalized. For example, the articles you see, or even written articles, if you see the short or long version, and this kind of stuff. Of course, it's dangerous. We have to be careful on that. And also, one thing that recently came into mind on data pseudonymism is that if we had a some kind of AI, we give some data to it and it tells what's actually interesting. Say there's something weird going on this economics or financial, something like this. It would be a reduced amount of handwork a lot. Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah. Was that your question? You want to? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's
actually. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any more questions? Do you have more? Or anybody else? Yeah. We are actually having, when you read our articles, you are having some small portion is actually having a feedback form, so that they can write something or select how well they performed. And you get a lot of interesting feedback there. But I'm not actually, if you talk about recommendation engine, I'm not sure if that's actually, it's actually shown in there. Maybe it's more like how difficult it's from RNA, it's difficult search. Stuff. I think it's a little bit better now, but anyway, it's not that kind of, you know. But yeah, most of the AI in here is that it's still not so. Recommendation is only that's directly. Also, the bot that's creating articles that's on to the audio. So otherwise, it's like internal. It's not directly shown. That's a good question. For Qualy, of course, ROI means different things. So we have some budget, and we can't get more money. We can't sell stuff. So ROI for us means that we are getting more customers watching this, or they are reading more, or more audience, and also. They are more satisfied when we are giving better information or something. And it's difficult. Compared to some company, commercial company, you just see how much money you are getting. For us, it's not that easy. But maybe it's more like we try out how easy it would be and then some estimate on that one. For example, for our recommendation, we have the first version, then we like analyzed how many people used that, how did it affect, did they like watch new movies or new videos and this kind of stuff. And then we decided to continue. It's like, yeah, audience analysis, I think it's the key thing that's happening. Yeah. Of course, if you're doing automated scheduling for cameramen, we can figure out how much time. Like how much less resources people had to use for doing that kind. But yeah, not money directly. Good question. Other questions? I'm waiting for questions to the left-hand side of the room. Actually, I had a habit when I was giving lectures and teaching in TUT, I had the habit of dividing the audience into different quarters and then asking from each of them a question. And usually it worked very well, you know. But I'm not doing that now. Okay, but it seems like no more questions. So maybe we should conclude on this one. Thanks for listening.